everyone, this is Matt, and welcome to another episode of Takeout with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better, not perfect nutrition and the new food economy. Who's up for a food awakening? Today we're lucky to have Clorinda Pharmacy Stanley, a fifth generation farmer on the show. She's originally from Alabama, but did not set out in life to follow her family's footsteps. But in 2017, she found herself returning to the roots as the CEO of Green Heifer Farms, a medicinal plant and hemp farm in Liberty, North Carolina. As one of the first black women to be licensed in North Carolina, she was elected as the 2019 Feature Farmer for Hemp History Week, the nation's largest grassroots campaign for the federal legalization of industrial hemp. She's been the feature in more than 200 national and international publications, including April's Oprah O magazine, as well as a sought-after speaker at national conferences. Green Heifer Farms is one of the very few black-owned farms in Chatham County, and perhaps the only one growing hemp that is led by a black woman. The farm is committed to the best practices, and it seeks to create a learning lab where aspiring and current farmers can gain critical skills in boutique hemp and medicinal plant cultivation, production, and needed business skills. Green Heifer Farms hopes to increase the number of socially and ecologically conscious farmers with a focus on underrepresented populations. Can't wait to hear this podcast. As you can tell, she's doing great things, always looking for speakers who promote socially and ecologically conscious farmers, ideas. And I think this is really great timing for this podcast. So looking forward to it. Right, over to you, ladies.
Super excited about this conversation with Farmer C. We are thrilled to introduce her to you as a friend and colleague in the food industry, but also just, we're going to call her an expert, even though she's incredibly humble, saying, you know, here as a student, we're always learning, and truly we are all these works in progress. But C, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and do a deeper dive on hemp farming, because I think it is probably one of the most misunderstood spaces in so many ways and on so many levels. So before we start, I would love to hear you just share with our audience a little bit how you got into this and where you are now.
Wow, yeah, sure, thank you. Every time I hear an introduction, I'm listening like, wow, she sounds cool. So I appreciate that gracious introduction of me. So how did I get into hemp farming? Well, I kind of fell into it. I can't say that having an agrarian lifestyle was part of my plan. I am a fundraiser, so that's what I do. But I was at the time in a marriage, and my partner was going through a career transition, and he actually wanted to farm hemp. He wanted to grow hemp specifically. And I, having a farming background, which is very different than being a farmer, let me tell you, but growing up on a farm, said, well, if we're going to be involved, we might as well look into being involved from the production side and, you know, acquire some land. And so I went and I bought land. I did not stay with the man, though. So I kept the land, let go of the man, and I had a farm. And the story continues from there. I had a farm. And so I did go through a moment where I had to really ask myself if I wanted to farm hemp, because there are a lot of people attracted to farming just for hemp. And I tell people, I actually have a course, and in my course I teach them that don't go into this if all you want to do is grow hemp. Go into this if you want to be a farmer, because that's a very different mindset. So, yeah, I'm a farmer, and I happen to grow hemp. I don't have a hemp farm, though. I have a medicinal plant farm, and one of the beautiful medicinal plants that we grow is hemp.
And you're there in North Carolina, which I have such a heart for. I went to Duke, and my parents have now retired down there, and some of the just delightful farm country. So I look forward at some point when we're traveling again to coming down your way. You know, one of the things in farming today that we're hearing so much about, and I learn all the time from Robin about farming and just what we need in our farm system and some of the changes. So I know you guys are going to dive into that. But one of the things that I really struggle with is that the South has such a complicated history with farming. So I'm just going to dive right in there. And as a Black woman deciding to now be a farmer in North Carolina and get investment, et cetera, it just strikes me that this wasn't the easiest path for you to go down in that part. And I'm wondering, as you are inviting other women into and women of color into this farming space, what you how when you say that you're teaching them, how are you teaching them to address things like the just the racism that exists in even getting the money to set up and support your farm?
Yeah, that's a question right there. Mm-hmm. To tackle it. One, there is a resiliency that only being a member of certain groups in this country can create. There's just no other way to get it. And it doesn't matter how much resiliency you're born into, whether you're born into a stable environment or an unstable environment. There is a very unique experience of being a woman of certain colors in this country, because we tend to use the term people of color as if they're all treated the same. And we happen to know, research supports, that you can look into any particular group and it's the darkest skinned members of that group that are going to be treated the most poorly. You see this in our culture here in the U.S., this country founded upon these principles. You see it in other countries across the world. The Latin American community has a tremendous problem with this. So that's just the reality. And being a Black woman, specifically a Black American woman in the South, that's going to give you a level of gumption that just cannot be manufactured. That's something that you can only have through experience. So I don't invite women to join me in farming. I am simply clearing some brush from the pathway that has been laid by my forefathers and foremothers and my ancestors and all of those who have contributed, my indigenous cousins, all of those who have contributed to the very infrastructure in which the racist systems were built upon. Systems that did not have me in mind at all, not when the legal system was built, not when the land ownership, education, across the board. So for me, specifically, and I didn't, grow up with the storybook childhood. I was a two-time teenage mother. I grew up in the poorest county in Alabama that still today, 2020, operates under a segregated system of education. And that continues right now. So I'm very clear on the design of the system. And let me also say, there is nothing wrong with the system. The system works exactly like it was designed to work. It was actually genius system design, racism and oppression. We need a new system. And I am not inclined to ask for a seat at anyone's table, because even if you've provided me a seat, was I part of the agenda setting conversation? That's where we need to be. And Black women, indigenous women, brown women, you know, whatever group, because sometimes we've gotten so to the point that it's almost an Olympic of oppression where it was such an effective system. You have marginalized communities warring within, which that's a whole other conversation. But we have always been part of agriculture. We designed it. We set the system up, the women. And so I just want to create a safe space to share what I've learned. I'm an expert on my experience. When I'm talking to people, you know, I came into this naive, thinking I was going to plant hundreds of acres. And they were going to be these magic seeds that were going to create these 12-foot tall plants that are drought resistant, pest resistant. You know, I bought into the hype that was being sold. And I learned some very expensive lessons. I've attempted to start a business in an already unstable situation. So have had to navigate, you know, the dissolution of a marriage during a period of tremendous growth for our farm, especially as it relates to attention and social awareness, while still navigating all of the stressors of being a Black woman in America. I've got Black son, I've got Black daughters, I'm a 44-year-old grandmother, I've got a full-time job, you know, real life stuff. And I'm able to do that. I'm designed, not designed for the stress, not designed for the extra, but I'm designed to ascend. And so I wanted to create a space where other women can come, where it is a safe space. It is somewhere where you can be as Black as you want to be, as brown as you want to be. You can go, you know, celebrate your existence however you want to be and get some real live education about entering this arena. I don't encourage people to just grow hemp. You don't want a monoculture business model. It's not good for your soil. So have those kinds of conversations, because I have not found space where those conversations were happening on a regular basis and I had easy access to it. So a lot of things I've had to go and learn. And I don't feel that I was put in a position to just learn self. I've always considered myself to be a vessel. So I'm just operating in my purpose. I'm being a vessel and providing real life practical information that's unique to women of color. Although all are welcome.
You know, as I listen to you, the two words that come to mind are authenticity and resiliency. And I think authenticity is in such short order. And then resiliency, I stood on the other side of that system as a white woman growing up in the South. And I will often say the exact same thing, is that this thing was designed to extract. It's not broken. It was designed to extract human lives. You know, whether we're talking about plantations and slaves, or we're talking about the current farm workers on berry farms in California right now today, or the factory workers that are managing in these meat packing plants with such atrocious conditions. This system was designed to extract. And I think I am 100% there with you. It's like, we need a new system. And I also think we need a new table, because again, the same people that were designing that system also designed the table. So it left intentionally huge demographics out, and enormous wisdom and enormous expertise. As I listen to you, I think what's also really, really powerful is owning the authenticity of your story as a mother, and that in the pain that any of us have in our stories, the pain is the package that a lesson comes wrapped in. And clearly you've had the strength and fortitude in your 44 years to navigate the pain to get to the lesson. And that becomes a skill set or a muscle or something that you develop over time. And as I listen to you, I do hope that people hear that, because for any growth, it's not easy. And, you know, people will often say, oh, the seed buried underground and has to like break its way open to come out and emerge. I mean, it's the same process for all of us.
Yeah, but you know, I don't want to romanticize oppression, because it takes away the accountability. And it's not necessarily a beautiful story, you know.
I completely agree, and thank you for correcting me on that. But so, you know, I've come into this from the finance side to see the discriminatory lending practices, to see the policy that was put in place hundreds of years ago, to see the policy that was put in place in the 1920s, and to understand how insidious this is and how systemic this is and how intentionally oppressive this is. And I think for a lot of people, Ashley and I have talked about this a lot, you know, sort of that fear, the fear of owning our participation and our role in that, the fear of owning our ignorance in this, the fear of owning, you know, the ineptitude that someone can feel in not knowing where to do or where to step into and where to belong. And as I listen to you, I so firmly believe in the leadership of women, especially women of color. And again, not to sort of paint that with one brush, because with the wisdom that comes from these different demographics and the expertise that's coming from these different demographics, it's who we are as a country, and we will fail without that fabric of all of these different threads woven together.
You know, sometimes failure allows you to go back and re-strategize and come back to the table. You know, I had a failed crop, and that was a devastating moment. I had personally invested thousands of dollars into that crop. I remain to this day the one who has invested in my farm success the most, because, you know, it's my dream. Even though that dream is to serve the community, I don't feel that anyone should invest more in your dream than you're willing to invest. And I'm not just speaking financially. But sometimes, you know, maybe we need to fail so we can get our act together. Because honestly, I will let you know, I've been underwhelmed by some of the conversations that I've been a part of. I remember saying on that stage a couple of years ago in San Diego that, you know, I'm not inclined to ask for a seat or ask anyone to make space. And there's a mindset shift, I hope, that occurs where people are just paying attention to where they're spending their money and who they're spending their money with. Because appealing to the morality of a lot of Americans and a lot of people, and the, you know, just the humanity of some of the issues we're facing right now isn't and hasn't worked. It hasn't. And I'm just of the opinion that if people were to really start to hold accountable companies and brands and institutions that help to perpetuate these injustices and these inequities, then things would shift. Absolutely. Stop spending your money with companies that continue to put out statements but aren't showing action. You know, you got some of these companies giving out $100 million, but your CEO is worth how many billion? Mm-hmm. And you're going to give $100 million is that for all the Black people or just the ones in Detroit? Like, mm-hmm. Really? And society, you know, and I know this sounds contradictory. I'm a fundraiser. I do believe in, you know, actually people have a right to give to whoever they want to give. But that comes with a caveat. Some of y'all have more money. there is a particular group that has the majority. So therefore, you sure you don't want to really give to make a difference and solve some of these problems? And people, you know, as consumers, same decision making when you're buying and you're going to get your CBD. Although, you know, I don't use CBD in any of our marketing. You don't see the word CBD on our website. I don't tout my tea as a CBD tea. We're about medicinal plants. And there are over 100 beneficial cannabinoids. And we're not even including the terpenes and the flavonoids. Like, there's so much more beauty to the plant than CBD. So I'm very careful not to disrespect the plant like that. But yeah, people have to really be conscious consumers and hold companies accountable. And that's what they hear. That's what we hear in this society. Just appealing to the moral core, it's not working. Like, I don't have conversations with white folks anymore about why they should care about racism. 2020, if I have to have that conversation, you need to talk to more black people before you come to me.
That's right. And
I want to say really quickly, because, I mean, again, it's like these systems were designed to extract. They're not broken. We can't fix them. They're toxic. And recently, I don't know if you know this, the first Black-owned stock exchange in U.S. history is opening soon. And it's speaking exactly to this point, is that these current systems, whether we're talking about food or farming or finance, they're toxic and they're racist and they're sexist. And, you know, to step back and say, you know, if 1% of venture capital money goes to people of color and only 3% of venture capital money goes to women, I mean, how hard is that? How hard is that to try to even like pry the dollars out of these hands that we know, like you have just said, you know, are the share buybacks are insane. It's like $1.1 trillion last year in share buybacks. It's just benefiting that very, very, very top executive level. So, you know, again, I think it's systems design, it's systems thinking, and systems change.
It is. And by creating your own sustainable farming business as a Black woman, you're putting yourself in a position that you're less reliant upon a system that has never demonstrated that you are a priority. And that's what I want Green Heifer Farms to be, an example of that. You know, I don't romanticize farming. You watch my crude little YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I'm out there sweating. You don't wear lip gloss on the farm because bugs stick to them. I learned that real quick. And you're going to have to figure out how to squish a bug. You're going to have to. He's going to eat clean through your entire stalk. It's him or the plant. And so I show that, but I also show that understanding and recognizing that the land that I now call my own once belonged to others. Now, I don't feel the guilt, you know, the white folks should feel, because the way I see it is two groups that really need a reckoning from America, and that's the stolen from and the stolen. So being amongst the stolen, I do, you know, consider our farm my land, and they can take that up with white people, as far as I'm concerned. I want women like me to be able to experience that and to, you know what it is to be self-sufficient and still interface as much as you want, but create something that, you know, during times like this when so many people have lost their jobs and their security, and, you know, there's a certain sector of us that are experiencing it more than others, this is the time to reconsider how, for me, you know, how you're spending your life working for other people that in downturn will let you go.
I wanted to, so there was a very strategic intention that I had with bringing you on here today, because, and when you mentioned the stage in San Diego, I'll set the stage for that part without going into great detail, but we were both part of the 10th anniversary. Farmersee was being celebrated as the Farmer of the Year through the Hemp History Network, I guess it's referred to. And what you did for me was eye-opening, and that is embarrassing. I should not have been for 10 years a spokesperson for a food and a plant and its medicinal benefits and these pieces without understanding the heritage. I thought I understood some of it, like, oh wow, you know, we used to have for every plot of land, you know, you had 10 acres or whatever that was hemp. But not really understanding even deeper in there. And my intention with bringing you here today is not for you to do our work. Robin and I are very clear about that. As white women, we exactly what you're saying, like we have to do, I think not a question of whether things are failing. Like I am very clear, they have failed. They have failed because we're not living in the promise of what America was supposed to be and all of these other pieces. And one of the things that was extremely helpful that I would like to have you, if you're inclined, but like to have you share, because I don't, I continue to try to understand it, but you have, you did a great job of sharing it, is really understanding when you say, you know, CBD and the hemp plant, but I want to focus on CBD very intentionally right now because you're not selling CBD, which I love. Is so popular. There's so much money being put into it. And what we are seeing is that there is so much, I think just the way to say it is like white, not just white money, but white, it's the medical system, it's the justice system, you know, our prisons, et cetera, around this plant. And I think, you know, I am often someone who is talking to people about how hemp can be helpful in their health pursuit. And yet, I don't want somebody to be purchasing and using a product that is one that perpetuates an existing system. So one of the reasons I intentionally wanted you to be here and have this conversation is, how do people who want to enjoy the hemp plant go and the benefits of the hemp plant, how do they go about identifying who to purchase from? And this isn't necessarily a brand thing, but if brands come up, where they can be a part of a changing system. I think you've got some interesting collaborations and we could talk further about that piece. But I wanted to start there because what I don't want people to do is get excited about CBD and hemp and hear this agricultural conversation and then go to the store, their coffee shop and purchase and, you know, start using CBD and keep perpetuating a system that we are trying to change. Am I making sense in there? Or is that super muddy in terms of actually asking a question?
No, I think I understand the question, which is just,
okay. Thanks.
For me to provide any suggestions on how people can be more socially conscious consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we walk around with these little supercomputers in our pocket all the time. I've used social media to really broaden awareness of what we're doing at Green Heifer Farms. And there's a lot of other farmers that are doing the same thing. So you can do something like hashtag Black Hemp Farmer on Instagram, and you'll see tons of options. Now, not only do we focus on, so we have a four E's. We're a social enterprise. So education, economic empowerment, equity, and environment. So everything we do is tied to that. I always encourage people, if possible, to find someone local. Know your farmer. You need to know how they're growing it. Okay. I'm not going to say go to this particular farmer or that particular farmer if what they're growing is not true medicine, because there's a lot of irresponsible growing in this industry as well, as people are seduced by the idea of bigger is better. You want higher CBD points, CBD percentages, when people are out here buying it, and it's like, you don't even need CBD. Your body needs a little CBN with some CBG mixed in and maybe a sprinkling of CBD on top. You know, there's a lot of misinformation and miseducation out there, and you have farmers who are trying to produce to respond to the hype. And you want to make sure that you're not only being conscious in who's growing it, but how they're growing it. People who are, you know, using best practices in order to have the least impact on our planet. Now, with that said, and knowing that I do work in the environmental space, I will also say that trying to operate a business with as many green practices as possible costs a lot of green, because we in the sustainability, regenerative ag, there's so many buckets, organic farming world have not made that space accessible for farmers of color. So taking all of those things into consideration, you know, if you can buy local, great. If you can buy from a farmer that reflects your values, great. And not to discount the traditional, you know, some white farmers, they need y'all to buy their stuff too. I'm not saying discount and exclude, but if you got a choice, you know, and there's only limited, definitely make more of an effort in your overall buying practices. And it may not be that your hemp comes from a black farmer, but maybe when you're hiring someone to do your graphic design at your company, you could look towards black and brown vendors and professionals as well. So I would tell, you know, anyone looking, don't become so focused, but try to see opportunity in all things that you do and in all ways that you spend your resources.
It's so critically important that people hear you and understand what you are saying. And as I listen, you know, the reason we launched Free Plant Capital is because the capital system that we have all inherited is enormously extractive. And you can't fix this extractive food system when those assets are coming from an extractive capital system. So, you know, really the open invitation is, just as we've seen this movement in food towards regenerative organic agriculture and regenerative organic practices and what that actually looks like, those same practices can be employed in the financial world. And again, you look at 96% of farm operators are white, the same profile parallels the financial world. And again, you know, you've got pretty much one demographic represented when you look at Wall Street. And again, it's why the whole thing is crumbling, because you haven't tapped into the diversity, the creativity and the innovation and the collaboration that is actually representative of who we are. And as I listen, you know, it's more urgent than ever. And I don't know if you're seeing this, but some of the conversations we've been having have been with the blockchain community and how disruptive that community can be to agriculture in a really positive way because of the ability to capture data, to, you know, captured into this blockchain technology in a totally transparent way that doesn't enable those same systems to extract. And I don't know if you've been in those conversations yet, if it's surfacing, in terms of access to capital and the innovation that's starting to emerge there.
That was for me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm like listening for the answer. Like, ooh, I want to know that too. let me say though, just going back to what you were saying as far as the operators and Wall Street, also think about those who are running the input companies, you know, who are producing the fertilizers, who are building the tractors, who are supplying the operators in the agricultural space. That too is dominated by a very specific demographic. So it's definitely very widespread. Now, I'm going to need you to repeat the question because I was listening more as one who wants to know the answer. So I'm probably not going to know the answer, but can you repeat the question for me?
Well, the thing that we've seen is that the capital deployment is incredibly extractive and incredibly discriminatory. Mm-hmm. And you know, then clearly has resulted in this discriminatory system. And that there's innovation, there's opportunity there. They're just the way we had like the fossil fuel industry and all of a sudden in came solar and wind. And we had conventional ag and in came regenerative and organic. We've got a really toxic financial system. And there's an opportunity to think about what regenerative capital looks like. And so if it's, you know, for replant, we would look at it as we're going to tie our loans to soil health. So, you know, farmers, when you talk to them, they're like, look, I've always captured carbon. Why is everybody talking about this now? This is what soil is designed to do. I've always done this, you know, and how you monetize that so that it actually benefits the farmer instead of, like you're saying, you know, the input providers or the middleman or the bank or whatever. And I'm wondering, you know, in those conversations, especially as these models emerge around carbon sequestration and all this other stuff, that opportunity to really, you know, because we sort of just, for whatever reason, that financial system has just been the sacred cow that has not changed at all. And for whatever reason is left standing. And all of a sudden, you know, and I'm not going to pretend to know more than I wish I knew about crypto and blockchain and all these things, but clearly there's an opportunity to disrupt that system.
I agree. And I'm limited, actually, in what I can say, just because I work for an environmental organization that does operate in that space. So I'm always like wearing two hats. There is an opportunity there. But and I do think that there will be an increase in that area. But I'm always concerned about, you know, you're weighing the environmental outcomes with the people outcomes. And, or you're weighing the industry outcomes. And typically, there are some people who benefit more than others. So even if you did restructure that capital, if the system was restructured, how do you get it to certain people? That's always the challenge. And how do you make sure that that's done equitably? For our farm, you know, I've turned down investors. There was a brief moment, you all might remember this little blip. Everybody was talking about economic opportunity zones. Are you familiar with those?
Why don't you give a definition for our listeners?
Okay.
No, I'll say no, just so that we can have, like, so that I can be honest. No, I'm not familiar. Yes, I would like to learn.
Well,
go ahead.
You didn't miss anything. And I don't want to get too technical because, you know, I'm not a financial or legal expert, but essentially, counties within states designated a certain area as an opportunity zone. And it provided an opportunity for the extremely wealthy to invest in projects in those areas or affecting those areas. And by doing that, they were able to reduce the amount of capital gains taxes. So, it was a great way for very wealthy people to pay fewer taxes, which is, you know, of course they need to pay fewer taxes. I get it. But on the flip side, the idea was that they would be investing in these economically depressed areas. And so those areas would benefit from increased business development. It didn't quite happen like that. And just to keep this succinct, the people who generally benefited. So you haven't really heard much about that program. But I was approached because our farm is in an economic opportunity zone. And I was approached by funders on several occasions. And my issue with that, the same reason why I don't really do loans, you know, that's not the model that we're based on, is how do you increase equity in a significant way when you're requiring equity in order to receive investment? Like, our model is based on that. If I am a Black-owned farm that's trying to level the planting field, and you come with an investor, you know, someone who wants to put some money towards the effort, they're typically also asking for a percentage of equity. And I have a problem with that. If this particular group has most of the money and you're already charging me to use some of the money, because it's very important that you continue to make money, why would I have to give you a stake ownership in my company too? Because you're betting that if I'm successful, you will be able to attach your, you know, my success will forever make you money. Nah, that'll be a no for me, dog. So I am leery of investors, and I'm actually leery of most, and I know it can work, especially in the tech space, but when you're talking about land ownership, that's a different space. There's different connotations when it comes to farming as well. So, yeah, even with the loans, I'm not a fan of loans either. I don't think that should have to be the case in order for us to move things forward. I think we keep trying to make some system fit, when we know that the financial system, the banking system, the wealth system in this country is designed on a system of inequity. You can't bring those solutions and say, let's make this fit. We need a new system.
I mean, I am listening to you and texting Ashley, and I am so with you 100%. I think, you know, on the national stage, you know, this message that you are sharing and the knowledge that you have is remarkable and so deeply needed. You know, truly, I just, part of my work going forward now, having had this conversation with you, is to have people hear you, see, because it is so needed on so many levels in society. And I agree, you know, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, unfortunately, or fortunately, like you said. I mean, in that failure will be the birth of something else. I really want to thank you for your time today. And I think we're going to spin it over to Ashley, who's going to wrap it with a series of questions, just quick, short answer questions.
I'm scared.
No, don't be scared. Gosh, every time I hear you talk, like, I mean, I was looking at one of your social media posts and you had your son on there, and I was like, look at her. Like, just, you were talking about farming and like how we get, you know, getting your son involved. I don't know your son's age, but, you know, getting your son involved in it and that piece. And, you have so much wisdom and you are extremely, clear with that wisdom. I don't know, like, it's very, sorry, how do I say this? The when you share pieces of you, I learned so much from it. So I'm just really grateful for that piece. Without that sounding, we'll just leave it there. I'm going to move into the questions because I'm that's not coming out well. But anyway, I just wanted to share that piece.
I felt the energy. Thank you.
And that was really my plug to make sure it's echoing what I was trying to say, is echoing what Robin was saying, is you guys just follow her. Like, if you do nothing else, follow Green Heifer Farm on Instagram. And by the way, if you do something smart for yourself, and that is buy that Sanity, because I mean, I give it to everyone. Like, it is literally such a game changer, delicious tea. And I make it as iced tea. It's so good. So thank you for what you are, the what you are going through to grow that for me, because I'm certainly benefiting from it. Okay, so with all that said, you've shared a lot of different pieces, and I'm curious, when we use the term greatest, where you're going to net out with this one, the greatest obstacle that you've overcome?
Self-doubt. Believe in what others said, whether it was society, whether it was a supposed loved one, whether it was a misguided family member, just allowing all of that cumulatively to have me questioning my capability.
Thank you. The next question, I'm struggling a little bit because we always ask, what's the greatest opportunity you see in this movement? And what I'm trying to figure out right now is which movement. We've talked about quite a few things. We've talked about agriculture. We've talked specifically about hemp agriculture. We've talked about racism, economic zones. Robin, feel free to jump in on this one if you've got a movement. Or C, you could take it and say what comes to mind when we are asking about sort of what you see the greatest opportunity with where we are right now for change on that front. I know, Robin, I see your light pop on. Help me out here a little. I'm flailing.
No, I'm just thinking, like, I need to go buy that sanity right now. I've got four kids, ages of 15 and 20. But, I would say, I would drill down in farming, because clearly, with 96% of farm operators as white, there's what would you say the opportunity then is? And I've loved listening to you.
Yeah, I would say bet on a black woman. Research has shown it, and white scientists did the research, so it's not like, it's questionable. Oh, well, we didn't do. No, you did the research, and research has shown that when you are successful in uplifting the most marginalized members of a group, that it has the trickle-up effect. Everybody benefits. Mm-hmm. Everybody. Mm-hmm. And, we have such a hard time in this country. We have such an issue with black folks. Specifically, now we have a high tolerance, obviously, for foolishness. We allow brown children to be locked up in cages. And I don't know if any of us have checked recently to see if they're still in the cages or not. They could still
being locked up, and they are newly being separated from their parents amid the COVID crisis. Yeah. So just bringing in on that.
That's going on. You've got folks jumping out of vans in Portland, and I just read they tear gassed the mayor. It's a lot going on, and you have people who are out during a global pandemic, mind you, saying, hey, yo, we're going to square this up or not. Over here been waiting for the square up. So, it's so hard for us because we often immediately think, me not being included in we right now, but I'm just, trying to be inclusive in the conversation with the viewers. We tend to think that if we say, let's support black women, that that's to the exclusion of someone else. And see, that thinking is problematic. So when we can get to a point in this industry that we can be respectful of the most oppressed group of women, often all over the globe, mm-hmm. we can do a better job and enable them to grow. Who freaking grows better? Come on. Like, why not? And empower them through that. Then that's when we'll be worthy of growing mothers. We can't respect our own.
Yeah, as I listen to you, I grew up in Houston, and when Beto O'Rourke ran for Congress down there, though he lost that election, one of the absolute benefits of his race was that in the city of Houston, 17 black women were elected as judges. And it just completely changed the profile of the bench, which then, of course, begins to tackle these systemic injustice in the city. So it's something, you know, I've asked a lot of my friends, like, there's Emily's List, but is there, like, is there an Emily's List for Black women, you know? And I've learned about a group Color of Change the other day, but across the board, 100%, I think that is the greatest, most succinct answer, that is just so powerful and could create such massive impact and change. You know, as I listened to you, I was texting Ashley, and quite candidly, was just like, holy shit, she needs to be in front of, you know, on a national stage with a huge platform and a huge microphone. So the next question is that, you know, what one message would you send to Congress?
Oh, can I say F you? That's probably not eloquent.
You can even use the real word. Yes.
I vote. And I encourage people to vote, and I attempt to vote strategically. But I, in general, don't like politicians or trust them. I don't. I mean, you have people who become drunk with power on a policeman's salary. Like, why are you out here beating Black people? You need to be beating down your boss's door and asking for a decent wage. But you focused on the wrong thing. So if you have cops that can't handle it, imagine people who have the ability to go and vote and create law. It's all a scam, but I understand it's a necessary scam. So yeah, I wouldn't really have anything for Congress. I really wouldn't. Congress could KMA. Well, no, because I no longer insult my A in after 2019. They're not even worthy. Yeah, I don't. I wouldn't have anything to say to Congress.
I think that's fair. You know,
there may be a few politicians here and there that are halfway decent, but as a collective whole, they're perpetuating the system.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think too, like when you stand on a farm, I was standing on a farm in Nebraska, and it was desolate. I mean, it was just, you know, absolutely desolate, had been routinely sprayed to the point that no bugs existed in the air. And I just stood there and I thought, you know, how can Congress rule on anything, anything? I don't care if we're talking about WIC. I don't care if we're talking about subsidies, anything. How can those guys rule on anything unless we put them on a bus and get them out here and they stand in this farm and can feel what's happening to these towns that are shutting down and they can see what's happening? And I think there's an ignorance there that is just beyond
need to go to the farm, and not just the landowners or the farm owners, but the people who were working those farms, often for less than fair wages, because we are very much a country that, you know, we take advantage of others economically. And so you have that. They need to sleep in the hood, they need to sleep under a bridge. Like, they need to live the lives of their constituents.
Get out of D.C.
That's not what, you know, that's not who's making the decision. I don't have anything to say to Congress.
So the last question is not political, super easy. If you were a food, what would you be?
If I were a food, you know what I would be if I were a food? And I don't even know if this qualifies as a food, but the little puffer fish that's poisonous, you have to cook it a certain way or you'll die. And for some reason, we've decided that that obviously means it's a delicacy. And we put an exorbitant amount price on it. I would be that daggone puffer fish because I would live my life in the ocean knowing that if someone caught me and cooked me incorrectly, then they would get their karma immediately. And I just think that's cool. Plus, they can puff. I think it's like a puffer fish. Are you familiar with the?
Totally. That is the most original answer we've had.
Yeah. So the person who rubs me the wrong way, I got something for you.
But you also have this superpower and you have the puffing ability, right? Like the puff is the superpower. Yeah. Yeah.
Ocean. I've got cool friends. The ocean is beautiful.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'll be that little fish.
Oh, man, I love it. See, we have so many plans for you. I'm so excited to catch each announcement and continue to help to direct people to how they can get products that you're involved with. And for those that do decide to make that jump into the farming space, they can learn with you you know, have those conversations. And tell me, when we first connected on this, you had a GoFundMe that was going on. Do you still have that going on?
It is. It's wrapping up. I think I have like 20 days, maybe not even that much.
All right.
So, and I've been doing, I'm terrible about promoting it. I'm much better at raising money to give away than I am at like encouraging people to invest in what I'm doing. So there's
so
that.
Let me jump in. So people need to invest. So we are going to push. We're going to push out the GoFundMe because people need to invest in what you are doing for a lot of reasons. But also, I think what is critically important is we started this conversation and your four E's, you hit on it, the education piece of this. And you are masterful at it. So as people can invest in you and they can invest in HEFA Farms, it gives you the capabilities to continue to build out this platform and this stage that you stand on. Uniquely.
Thank you.
So that, you know, for those listening, go check out the GoFundMe page.
I Fund Women, actually. It's I Fund Women, which is a platform specifically for women founders.
Perfect.
And
they
Awesome.
And there's also something too. I know when I bought my Sanity, you gave money to Bama Kids. We won't get into all of that, but I loved seeing that your money was going, as you said, you're awesome at fundraising for others. So it looked like it was from your hometown, from where you grew up, right?
Yeah, Bama Kids, great organization in Wilcox County, Alabama. And then we also supported the Black Dirt Collective. So it was two organizations. Yeah, I love that. I'll never be a billionaire. I know that. Because why would I have that much power, that much energy hoarded in my bank account when there's so much good you can do, right?
Yeah, that is, for those that do follow me on social media, I was sharing Andy Stanley is someone who I like to follow his teachings, and he shared yesterday, and it was really ask yourself the questions, you know, when you think about, of course, we're all just managers of money, right? Because it doesn't go with us. It stays around after we're gone. And his comment was, do you want more stuff or more stories? And I can definitely tell you're with me on the more stories side, you know, let's create the stories and change the lives. So I'm so grateful that our lives have overlapped and super glad to connect you and Robin. I know more and more things will be coming of all of this. And for everyone listening, I Fund Women, head over there. We'll have the links in the show notes. And we're so grateful for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you providing me a platform with no condition other than to come as my full and authentic self. So
Well, thank you. I mean, thank you so much for being exactly that.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Wow. Thanks, Pharmacy. Thanks, ladies. Didn't I tell you it'd be a great podcast? So many people striving to create change for the best, change for the better of our planet and people. And the more podcasts we have like this, well, the better I'm going to feel. And I think change is just around the corner. Right. On to next week. We have Dr. Lisa Price on the show. She's into integrative and holistic care, an author, and part of an organization called Gathering Roots Wellness and Retreat Center, who focus on wellness, and they will be farming part of the land for food. Looking forward to what she has to say. So, until next time, I'll see you then.